Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2016, episode 16. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast. We have a new president-elect in the United States. Thank God this is not a political podcast. Though it is presented by the Remington Trophy. I'm Travis Justice, your host, joined by former Husker All-American Dr. Rob Zadiskin.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. We
could make it a political podcast.
You know, the interesting thing, we absolutely could. We usually record either on a Monday night or a Tuesday night. Monday night, you were a little bit busy, and then Tuesday night was the election, and I don't think you wanted any part of recording on the election.
My kids had swim team. It was kind of a late night at work for me. I was kind of running all over. And then, with everything going on, I'm one of those guys where I'm a mild political junkie, so I do kind of get, I find the stuff kind of riveting. So I stayed up very late last night watching this.
Well, it's interesting. Did you happen to grab a beer when you were watching the election last night?
I did not.
You didn't grab a beer, but you grabbed
But I did tonight.
You grabbed a beer for the podcast. What'd you bring tonight?
We did a little, New Belgium every year. They've got, they call it their Lips of Faith series.
Okay.
But it's a yearly release, and they've done this release of sours over the last several years. So last year, what was it, La Folie?
The La Folie, yeah.
La Folie.
Yep.
La Folie. I'm not French or Belgium, so I kind of screwed that up. This year they did it, Les Terroirs?
I don't know. Just
T-E-R-R-O-I-R.
Say it with confidence and people will believe you.
Le Terroir.
Ooh, there you go. You nailed it.
Anyway, wood-aged, dry-hopped, sour ale.
You know, and it's not as sour. You and I think, have very similar tastes when it comes to the sours. We like the bite.
Yeah, we basically want to have mildly beer-flavored vinegar.
Yes, either that or just like Sour Patch Kids in a bottle. So, but this isn't bad. I don't. The wood-aged and the dry hop, I could live with this.
I like this one. I can smell the wood aged. Okay, so remember last week we had the
Beet beer last week.
The beet sour. It was earthy, root like. I mean, it was everything you'd expect from a beet beer. It had the smell. It had the taste. This kind of has a little bit with that wood aging. It's got a little bit of sort of an earthy aroma. I'm not tasting that though, and it's kind of, and I say that in a good sense. I kind of like that. It's kind of, you get kind of this real earthy smell, but then when you drink it, it's more of just kind of this really crisp sour.
It's got a really cool bottle to it. It's the New Belgium Lips of Faith series, the La Terra wood aged dry hop sour ale. This comes in what is this, a 16-ounce bottle, 20-ounce bottle? So how much was this? About $11, $12?
Yeah, ballpark, right around there, I think.
You know, if you get the wood-aged sours, they're going to cost you more. And people go, why does this cost so much? It's because they have to sit in a barrel for so damn long. And that's the truth. Yeah. You don't mass produce these. And when you don't mass produce them, you put a lot of time and effort into them. That can drive the cost up to them.
So. It does. I mean, it's, you know what? If you like a good sour, if you want kind of a, I hate saying special occasion beer.
It's
not one of these things you're going to pop open after mowing the lawn once a week.
Hey, the Husker Doc Talk Podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. The Remington Trophy is presented annually to the nation's top center. Named after former Husker great Dave Remington, the Remington Trophy Banquet will take place January 14th, 2017 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. Big announcement. This year's featured speaker is Tony Richardson, a 16-year NFL veteran who retired after the 2010 season. Not bad for a guy who was not drafted coming out of Auburn. He spent 10 seasons with the Kansas City Chiefs. This year's Ford Legends Award winner is Carl Mock. He played in the NFL for 13 years. He was a longtime assistant coach. He's retired, now living in Lincoln. His daughter is a former Husker swimmer and also lives in Lincoln with her husband and kids.
Tony Richardson.
Yes.
He came out of college same year I did.
You said
year before.
That last week.
I know, when I was thinking about this, he came out a year before I graduated, year before I finished up college. He finished playing, and in that time, I played one more year of college football.
Yeah.
Went pro, had about a about almost a half dozen year pro career. Went to medical school.
Got a job.
I finished medical school, went through residency training, which is another 4 years on top of that, and worked 2 years as a fully fledged physician.
Before he retired?
Before he retired from NFL football. That's how long this guy played. That's just impressive numbers.
And the Remington Trophy presentation benefits the Boomer Esiason Foundation, where Dave is the president. Cystic fibrosis is a chronic disease that affects the lungs and digestive system of about 30,000 children and adults in the United States, 70,000 worldwide. This year's CF speaker at the Remington presentation will be Nicholas Bell. He's a Nebraskan who has an inspirational story. Coming up a little bit later on, the Remington Trophy Watchlist Spotlight. Hey, Husker Hounds is on board with the Husker Doc Talk podcast this year. Now with three stores in Omaha, Husker Hounds is the best place to buy Nebraska gifts and officially licensed apparel. We've moved from the Halloween season onto the Christmas season, folks, so great Husker gifts and more for the holidays. Get to one of the three Omaha area locations and load up, including the new Husker Hound store at 149th and Maple, which is now open. For online orders, go to huskerhounds.com. And we want to thank huskermax.com each and every week. They help distribute this podcast. And if you're listening to us from Husker Max, thank you so much. We appreciate their support. All right, Rob, we're not going to beat around the bush. Getting your ass kicked on national television, we're a little late to the party on this, is not fun to watch.
It is, but, oh, God, that was an ass whooping.
But, you know, it's one of those things where I feel differently about this loss compared to, like, the Bo Pelini getting blown out years, because once the ball starts rolling, it's hard to stop it.
And this was one of those, which, I've been kind of racking my brain trying to remember any time I was actually truly on the receiving end of one of these. I can't come up with one. And the thing that's interesting about it is if you look at games like this, when you see these types of games, rarely is the team that won truly that good, as much as the score showed.
Yeah.
And the team that lost, they're never this bad. You know, the closest game I've been to that was like this, I mean, because there were games where, I mean, there were some Kansas games in there, some Missouri games in there, where you just slaughtered the opponent, but it was because they were truly that bad.
Yeah.
My sophomore year, a redshirt sophomore, we played Colorado and Lincoln. Tommy Frazier was a true freshman. Colorado at quarterback, Cordell Stewart was actually just coming back from an injury. I think Cordell was a sophomore. They had Coy Detmer filling in as the starter at the time. Again, highly touted, very good quarterback for Colorado. Brother of Ty Detmer, who won the Heisman Trophy. Coy was excellent, excellent quarterback.
He was good.
But Colorado's roster, so early 1990s, this is, like I said, this is Halloween night, 1992. Colorado's roster then, every year was an absolute who's who of the next spring's NFL draft. They were just absolutely loaded, offense, defense, linemen, skill position. They had a ton of guys drafted off of this team, and they were an outstanding, outstanding football team. We beat them 52-7. And it was one of those games where everything went right for Nebraska. Everything went wrong for Colorado.
And the ball starts rolling downhill.
And it did. I remember very early in the game, might have been Colorado's first series in offense. We tipped a pass, intercepted it, scored soon thereafter. I remember a little bit after that. Colorado stopped Nebraska. We punted. And I remember Dave Sizes, who was one of our wide receivers and special team stars, was the gunner on the punt team, comes down. The ball bounces right before it goes into the end zone for what would have been for a touchback. Dave Sizes, there was a bit of a drizzle that night. Dave hits his knees, goes sliding across the turf, catches the ball on the bounce at about the 2-yard line, and sets it down on the 1-yard line right before he slides into the end zone. So we've got Colorado. I mean, it was one of these things where just improbable plays. We pinned Colorado deep. I got to go back and check. We either got a safety on the play or on the a couple of plays later, or we stopped them. They had to punt out of the end zone, and we scored thereafter. Calvin Jones had about a 60-plus yard touchdown run. I mean, everything went right. Tommy Armstrong was throwing Hail Mary
bombs. You mean Tommy Frazier.
Holy crap, there's a Freudian slip.
Well,
it was one of these things where every single thing we did worked. And I'm looking across at these Colorado players, and we had a tie with them the year before in Boulder. And you knew who all of these guys were. They were all conference players. They were all Americans, and they were shell-shocked. I mean, they're sitting there looking at us like, what the heck's going on? And this was the same kind of situation that I saw in the field with Ohio State and Nebraska. Is Nebraska that bad?
No.
No, they're really not. But you hit the nail on the head. Sometimes that ball starts rolling. Things go right for one team, and they just go completely wrong for the other.
But I think what was driving Nebraska fans nuts, and rightfully so, is here you get the opportunity that you've been waiting for. You're back in the top 10. You're playing a top 10 team. And it just seems to be a repeat of the Wisconsin Big Ten championship games.
Well, here's the difference. I think people don't realize the how bare the cupboard was talent-wise for Nebraska when Riley took over. And I'm not saying there's no talent in there, but it was very thin. And we have talked a bunch on this podcast over the last month about how thin they are at offensive line, especially upperclassmen. I mean, there's just no upperclassmen depth. They've got so many injuries they're nursing. You look at the defensive line, the lack of depth on the defensive line, when essentially they lost the equivalent of an entire starting defensive line this past offseason. Two guys went pro, one guy transferred, and another guy just quit. There's four starting equivalent defensive linemen who left prior to this season that you've, one, got to replace with new starters, and two, there's an entire line's worth of depth gone. And at some point, that's going to catch up with you. And that's something I've kind of been sitting here worrying about for the last few weeks. In hindsight, it makes that game at Wisconsin all the more remarkable, the fact that Nebraska was able to hang in there. I think they kind of shot their load in that game, though. I just think emotionally they had nothing left after that Wisconsin game, because I think they gave it all up at Camp Randall.
Okay, I'll agree to an extent with you, but let me bring you another question, though. You're talking about the offensive line. What I was surprised about against Ohio State.
But you're seeing those injuries all over the place.
I get that, but weren't you surprised, though, how poorly the defense played? Some of the tackling was just downright brutal. Like, you're like, where did the – I mean, I had more faith in the black shirts than what they showed against Ohio State.
That was the worst performance I've seen out of them. Probably since that Purdue game last year.
Yeah.
That was really the one game last year. BYU, they gave up a bunch of yardage in the pass game. First half against Miami last year, they gave up a lot of yardage in the first half of that Miami game last year. After that, they really kind of buckled down. They played great against the run most all of last season. I mean, the big... what the hell was that kind of game last year was really the Purdue game.
Yeah, because it was Purdue.
It was, and guys were missing tackles. Fundamentals went out the window. You kind of saw that against Ohio State. I mean, it just, guys were bouncing off of ball carriers, not wrapping up, not making hits with good form. Just all the fundamentals seemed gone. Guys just weren't making plays. Banderas and Nathan Jerry, they just kind of thrived against Wisconsin and always seemed to be in the right spot. They were making great reads. Absolutely nothing was working against Ohio State. And, you know, you probably got to give a little bit of credit to Ohio State. I mean, I don't think that having Tim back, he clued the Ohio State guys into what Nebraska was going to do. He's been too far gone removed. But Ohio State... You know, you look at a game like this, and you realize how well coached they were. guys were in the right spots to make plays on both sides of the ball all game long. That was a very well-prepared Ohio State team. It was also, I think, an emotionally well-prepared Ohio State team. I think they were coming off of that loss against Penn State, kind of a mediocre performance against Northwestern, and all of a sudden, everybody's questioning them. And this is a team that I think kind of thrives a little bit on people questioning them. I don't want to call them an underdog role, but when people start questioning Ohio State and start questioning Urban Meyer and have these guys lost their edge, and is this a different Ohio State than from what we've seen with the best ball that they've played over the last four seasons, I think all of a sudden that kind of, I think they sort of hit a bit of a reset button. And emotionally and mentally, that was probably one of the better games I've seen Ohio State play over the last 2 years.
Well, and in the college football playoff now, and even Bobby Petrino from Louisville said it over the weekend, you now have to blow people out. And I mean, Ohio State has to blow somebody out. Michigan's going to have to blow somebody out.
And I think that was part of it, too, is that I think Urban Meyer was looking at this game going, okay, we've got a 9th and 10th ranked team here. We got to smoke these guys. I don't think they were looking to win. I mean, it was Urban knew he had to make it look a little bit brutal for them to look good in the polls.
Now, you're a doctor. Let's get to the scariest part of the game, because we can talk about this game till we're blue in the face, but we need to move on to Minnesota. But part of that is Tommy Armstrong, who was apparently knocked out. They go through.
Apparently, did you see it?
Yeah, I saw it.
I remember watching the game, and my I was sitting with my wife, and when you see a guy hit the turf
like that, that was like
that, he bounces onto his stomach, and one arm's at that funny angle, kind of like.
So you knew he was
like
out right there.
Like his arm's pinned underneath of him, and my wife goes, "Oh my God, look at his arm." Because, one, nobody lies on their arm like that, and when they do, they move quickly to get it out from underneath them. And there wasn't even a twitch.
It scared the crap out of everybody. I was sitting in the radio studio doing my radio show, and you know, I'm trying to do a radio show watching this, and I mean, you could hear a pin drop just everywhere, because you know, you hate to see that happen to a player. Now, we are recording this on Wednesday evening. They haven't announced whether or not he's going to play yet this Saturday. Do you think he plays? And should he play?
Well, should he and will he are two different things.
Should he? As a doctor, should he play?
Now, will he? I'm betting he does.
Okay, but as a doctor, should he?
I think he's going to. He has not been officially ruled out.
No.
They have not said that. They said they're going through the concussion protocol. The doctors are kind of going along making their decisions as we go here. He hasn't practiced yet. And to my understanding, he has to practice tomorrow to play in the game. Don't quote me on that, but that's my understanding of how they've got the protocol worked out. Should he? I don't think so.
Thank you. You know, I had this discussion. I think I was doing a radio show in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and they brought it up, and I said, listen, I said, you're between a rock and a hard place, because in the old days, we would have said, hey, if you feel good, you can see straight, you get back in there and play.
In the old days, he would have been back in the fourth quarter of that Ohio State game.
But now, when you see the severity of how he was knocked out, how they took him off the field, even though he came running back on the field later, and in the day and age where everybody's paying attention, I don't know, and I'm not a PC guy. I'm not politically correct.
We know more about these injuries, the head injuries, now than we did 10, 20, 30 years ago.
Yes. But I guarantee Tommy Armstrong is right now going, I feel good enough, I can play.
Oh, I guarantee you he is.
Yeah.
I bet he was pissed he couldn't come back in the fourth quarter.
You're probably right.
We said it a lot, the guy's kind of a gamer. He's one of these guys, whether he's throwing picks or not, the guy wants to play and wants to win. It's just not a good decision. And I'm looking at this game coming up with Minnesota. They're 7-2 and 4-1. They've got the same record Nebraska has.
We'll get to them, but
I just don't think
they have no depth at quarterback.
No, they don't.
There is nothing there.
And I get that. And I don't want to repeat a Purdue last year.
But a guy's safety and well-being is much more important than a win.
It is. 30 years from now, Tommy Armstrong will care more about his brain than he does the Nebraska-Minnesota 2016 game.
Yes.
And all of us should care
about his health and well-being.
Yeah, and all of us should feel the same way. And I look at the game coming up this week. You know, it'd be hugely nice to have Tommy Armstrong. I guess I look at it, and again, the O-line's hurting. The running backs are hurting. Ezigbo's hurting.
Yeah, but it's not like 94 when Matt Turman went under center at Kansas State when he had the best offensive line in the country and the best running back in the country.
And
at
you've
that
got
point.
Lawrence Phillips, and then backing up Lawrence Phillips, you got Damon Benny.
Yes.
Behind Damon Benny, you got Clint Childs. Behind Clint, you got James Sims. And it kind of went and went. And we had fourth stringers who would start
yes.
at most D1 programs if they just hadn't gone to Nebraska.
I forgot James Sims was part of that 94 team. Totally forgot.
Hellraiser.
Wow, I totally
forgot
that.
We called him that just more for his haircut than raising
yeah,
hell, because he was this incredibly intelligent, soft-spoken
because
guy.
I brought that up on the radio station in Sioux Falls today. I said, hey, you know, I said, I remember 94. But then you had to remind yourself, the players that Nebraska had in 94 aren't the players they have right now.
We were four deep at running back with NFL caliber guys.
It
was insane.
And you did have the best offensive line in the country, which you were a part of.
It was. I mean, we had so much talent there that it's almost kind of mind-blowing that the next year Amon Green comes in as a true freshman and bumps all of those guys
were
down a spot.
Were you surprised how bad Riker Fife was? I was.
Last year against, against Ohio State?
Yes.
In the context of things, no, because one, you know he ain't taking off and running to beat you.
Yeah.
And so the defense knows they can just kind of pin their ears back. It also means that those linebackers don't have to keep as sharp an eye on the offensive backfield on passing downs. They can drop back. They can watch the running backs, check who's coming into the who's going out into the flat. They can watch for the tight ends. The defensive backs can drop back into coverage. They don't have to, again, watch for that quarterback run. It really frees up a defense to do what a defense does best when you have a more one-dimensional quarterback. That's why everybody likes a quarterback. You don't have to be a true dual-threat guy. But if you're a guy with good passing ability who, in a pinch, can take off and run,
yeah,
God, that can really put a defense back on its heels. And Ohio State did not have to worry about that. I don't know how much they practiced for Riker Fife.
None.
But I guarantee you, somebody on Urban Meyer's staff knew that if Tommy goes down, they've got nobody. And you just know he's not going to be the guy who's going to beat you. It's the other guys on the offense that are going to beat you, and they could devote everybody to those other guys and not worry about Fife. At the same time, you look at Fife with a full week of practice against Purdue last year. You know, his numbers in terms of attempts and completions and yardage weren't horrible. Actually, his total, I mean, the high ends were quite good. But then you had all the interceptions.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who just, you know, he's been there a while. He's got, this is his only, his, truthfully, it's only his second year under Riley's system. So you can say he's been at Nebraska a while, but in terms of knowing a system, he's no better than a sophomore. So he's not a case where he's going to go out and with his in-depth knowledge of Mike Riley's offense, sit back there and pick you apart. But given what we know about Riker Fife, did it surprise me when he didn't have a full week of practice as the starter? I mean, last year against Purdue, he went into that Purdue game knowing he was starting.
Yeah.
Armstrong was nursing a pretty severe ankle injury, and we were all told the week before, yeah, Riker Fife's going to start the Purdue game. Fife went he took every snap with the first string offense, probably first and second string offense that week. Now he took, I don't know how many of the backups quarterbacks take, probably not a lot, but he went into that Ohio State game and had prepared for the Ohio State game with the knowledge that while I might go in, I will probably be riding the pine the whole game. Up, Now I'm thrown in against a pretty damn good, very well-coached defense.
And a very well-motivated team.
Very motivated team. And
I mean, that's like smelling blood. That's like the shark smelling blood in the ocean.
Oh, completely. And that, you know, I get, and that only fed Ohio State's role.
Yeah.
And it subconsciously, it's not like Nebraska just laid over and died. Those guys, I think, on a conscious level were sitting, hey, we've got to pick up the pace. Tommy went down. We've got to fight even harder. But when you're a team in Nebraska situation and you know that so much of your offense essentially lives and dies off of what Armstrong's able to do or not do, all of a sudden he's knocked out cold. You can't tell me that subconsciously there's not at least a little bit of everybody on that Nebraska team going, oh, shit, we're screwed.
Hey, time now for our Remington Trophy Spotlight of the Week, and it's going to be a guy the Huskers actually see a week from Saturday as they take on Maryland. We're focusing on center Brendan Moore from Maryland. He's a 6'3", 300-pound redshirt sophomore out of Austin, Texas. He's another one of these young guys, Rob, on the Remington watch list, who, you know, they're probably not going to win it this year, but he's going to be in the mix for it in a couple years. The thing about Brendan Moore that really amazes me, shocks me, is that he makes me feel really old because for as big as he is, he looks like he's 10.
We were talking about this before, and we're
just Google him, Brendan Moore, Maryland.
Yeah,
which go.
I'm looking at his program picture on the. It's actually University of Maryland's athletic department website, and holy crap, the guy looks like he's 17 years old.
Yes, I don't think he can't shave yet. I don't think he's shaving.
I don't think he is either.
Now, he played in...
Big dude, which he's... I mean, he's been a very good ball player for him. Started, I think, one or two games as a redshirt freshman.
Yeah.
You know, he's one of these guys that I think... I hate to say it, we're kind of getting down the list
Bit. I need Dave to come out with, like, a finalist list.
It is. And it's, he's a younger guy. He's not one of these guys that I'm looking at, even as a senior, going, oh, yeah, this guy's going to be a top five. There's a number of other guys on this list who are younger guys who I think are going to be a little bit higher up than Brendan. A very solid ball player, and he's kind of indicative of what some of these schools like Maryland have done in the last few years, especially since they joined the Big Ten in terms of recruiting. They have kind of stretched out a little bit and started reaching out. And they're making a stab at going after a few different guys, covering a little bit extra territory from a recruiting standpoint. You see that with him coming out of Austin. It used to be with Maryland. It was all a bunch of Atlantic Coast State guys. Maybe you had the occasional guys from upstate New York, but that was really about it. And so I think it's kind of a sign of the times with a school like Maryland that they're going after a guy like this. And he's a good, solid ball player. Don't know if he's going to win the Remington Trophy in 2 years. Might prove me wrong just because I said that. But it'll be interesting to see him in a couple of years if he's one of these guys who turns into the next Pat Elflein or somebody like that.
So the Huskers now turn their attention toward the Minnesota Golden Gophers. And Minnesota really, if you look at it, this way, Minnesota controls its own destiny in the West. It has to win out because it has Nebraska left, it has Wisconsin left, and at 7-2, that means they can still get to Indianapolis. Here's the deal. They've won 4 in a row. They lost their first two Big Ten games. They lost to Penn State, and they lost at home to Iowa. And when you're losing to Iowa this year, that's not good. Now, they've turned around and won 4 straight, but it's not like they're beating up world beaters, okay? They beat Maryland, they beat Rutgers, they beat Illinois, and they beat Purdue. Those aren't what I'd call 4 quality wins, Rob.
No, but it, you look at where Nebraska's at with the injuries, the lack of depth all over the place. Tommy Armstrong, let's assume he's out.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that. Let's assume that he's out.
Like I said, I could be wrong. I could very much see him playing. I don't think he should, so let's assume he's out, and let's say it's Riker Fife. I think Nebraska would do very well just to have Fife. You know, I don't care who you put in at running back. Tell the offensive line, hey, we're just going to run it every frickin' play. And you just pound it up in there with a power run game the whole game. And basically try and make Minnesota beat you that way. Periodically, you're going to throw a play-action pass to the tight end. once a quarter, you're going to take a shot downfield at the end zone. But otherwise, I think you keep the ball on the ground for about two and a half quarters and see if you can't just wear Minnesota out. That's going to be a travel roster. They're coming to Lincoln. It's not their home confines. And so I think Nebraska needs to take advantage of the fact that they're in Lincoln, that Minnesota's got a little bit of a relative depth issue because it's a travel roster, and see if Nebraska just can't wear these guys out with a running game, burn up a bunch of time on the clock.
Well, here, and
wear them out trying to win it at the end.
The thing about, and this is going to come down to the defense, because this is where you have to be able to stop the run. Because Minnesota can't throw the ball with a shit, but it can run the football. Rodney Smith averages over 100 yards per game. He's about 18 yards from becoming a 1,000-yard guy. Mitch Leidner is a running quarterback.
The guy has burned Nebraska before.
Yes.
By running the ball.
Yes. So this comes down, I don't worry about Nebraska offensively as much as I don't worry about them defensively, because I like this defense. Even though they looked like crap last week, listen, I watched Iowa.
And Leidner's not JT Barrett.
No, he's not. And I watched Iowa early in the year shut this team down pretty easily.
Yeah,
in Minneapolis.
Those early in the season games, I'm not sure I'm putting a whole lot of faith in. And the reason is,
come on, they've played Purdue, Illinois.
Yeah, but I think all of these teams change a lot as the season goes along. And I say this, but due to injuries, it's the changes have been bad for Nebraska. It's been bad changes as we've gone along for the Huskers.
Minnesota almost got beat by Rutgers in New Jersey. It was a 34-32 game.
And that's pretty sad.
That is very sad.
I think the takeaway from that Rutgers game, though, and that's why I've got a little bit of faith in saying, okay, you know what, don't play Armstrong, go with Fife. Just run the ball, run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. Minnesota, this might be the weakest defense over the last three seasons I've seen a Minnesota team have. It's not like they've been great over the last three or four years, but they were serviceable and could stop you in a pinch on occasion. And this year's defense, they're not very good.
So Minnesota has Nebraska left, it has Northwestern left, and it has Wisconsin left, which would be a pretty good game at the end of the year.
And that's a pretty tough run for them. Yes. I mean, you could very easily see them finish three straight losses here.
Because Northwestern, Pat Fitzgerald, that dude can flat out coach, man. I love that guy.
Part of me wants to see him go someplace else.
I'm with you.
Just to see, part of me says that just to see what he can do. Sometimes I worry, though, that he's one of these guys that if you take him out of Northwestern, he'll never have that same relative level of success.
So we laid out what Minnesota has to do. If Minnesota wins out, Minnesota's going to be in Indianapolis, but they're not going to win out. Okay,
there's no way.
Yeah, they're not. First of all, I don't think they win.
Even if they knock off a severely wounded Nebraska team,
Nebraska wins by 17.
I think Minnesota's better than that. I think Minnesota plays well against Nebraska. They've been a bit of a thorn in Nebraska's side since Nebraska's joined this conference.
So Wisconsin got by Northwestern last week 21-7. So the Badgers, and if they want to get to Indianapolis, they've got Illinois this week at Purdue, then home against Minnesota. Right now, it's hard to see Wisconsin losing any of those three.
I agree, and it'll... if Wisconsin can heal up, kind of get their feet, their legs back underneath them, not like they've had a ton of injuries here, mostly on defense, but if they can maybe get a couple of those defenders they've lost during the year back, you put them on a neutral site, which I guess the Ohio State game was at Camp Randall, but they played at Michigan, correct? Michigan was in Ann Arbor.
They lost 14-7.
Yeah. And neutral site against Michigan, that could be a whole nother ball game. A second shot at Ohio State, that could be a whole nother
ball. Well, that's interesting that you said that, because on my radio show this morning, I said, okay, look at the top four in the college football playoff right now. Who are you throwing out? And I threw out Michigan. I said, if you could only throw out one, I'm throwing out Michigan, because I wouldn't say Michigan's had the toughest schedule in the world. They have to go to Ohio State and win in the horseshoe. And Ohio State knows in that game to play for a in the college football playoff in the Big Ten championship, it has to win. So
in a monstrously huge game.
Yes.
Against a very motivated Ohio State team.
Yes.
Which I think this one is now. I whatever happened, I think a sleeping giant woke up the week prior to that Nebraska game. I think I shouldn't say I think. I'm not sold on Jim Harbaugh yet.
What?
I mean, I think he's a great coach. Okay, let me rephrase that. That didn't come out right.
Because I'm sold on the dude.
Okay, I'm sold on him. I don't know if he's Urban Meyer, though.
I will give you that.
I think when
but
Urban
I
did, Meyer...
I like Jim Harbaugh.
Oh, God, the guy drives me nuts. See,
But you would want him on your side. You would.
God, I think he'd make me want to shoot myself after about an hour of hanging out with him.
Okay.
See, Urban Meyer's got kind of sort of that quiet... Sort of that quiet satanic.
But he's been there for a while. He's done it. He's been there,
fire,
done that.
Yeah.
You know, he's got
multiple
those steely
times.
Eyes. Yeah. Yeah. So let's bring this back to Nebraska, because right now the odds against their outside chance, but I don't think so. Yeah, they're not going to.
No.
They're not. But they can still get 10 wins. And that's a.
No, that I agree. Yeah, that I totally agree.
And
with.
That's significant now.
They could get 10 wins during the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about the whole. You want to play for championships. You want to go to those championship games.
Yeah, you gave me a hard time. You know, you agreed with me last week.
No,
then on Twitter, you get on and say, yeah, I disagree.
I kind of hemmed and hawed on the podcast with you, though. It's like, yeah, I see where you're coming from. I'm not 100% sold on that because, okay, so we go under Pelini, go to the Big Ten title game. I mean, there are Nebraska players out there, former Nebraska football players, who to this day are still wondering when Melvin Gordon's cleat marks and Monty Ball's cleat marks are going to finally wear off of their chests.
I know, but I would still rather play for championships than not play for championships. And I know somebody got on Twitter.
Yeah, but it's just, I think if you have a loss like that in a championship game, It can be detrimental to the program. And I think this year's Nebraska team, they've done some great things. We're not there yet. I think they need, you know what, the best thing for this team, it'd be incredible if they could do it. I think there's a strong likelihood Nebraska goes 2-1 these last three games. I don't know where the one is, and I'm not going to say where it is because I'm honestly not sure. I don't think it's out of the question because of the injuries and the lack of depth that they get knocked off by either Minnesota or Iowa.
The interesting part with the Iowa game will be this, because Iowa's not beating Michigan this weekend. All right, that's not going to happen.
No.
The question does Illinois just beat Sparty. Iowa's got to go.
Everybody's beating Sparty.
I get that, but Iowa's got to go to Illinois. And if Iowa gets the crap beat out of it this weekend, how does it feel going to Illinois? If it were to lose that, it would need to beat Nebraska to get to a bowl game, which changes the dynamic of that game.
I don't think it does. Iowa's not one of those.
They quit last week, dude. They quit.
Iowa, it's you know, you talk about you want to play for championships.
But they don't.
And you want to go to bowl games.
But they don't. No, they want to go to bowl games, but they're fine with that. When you sign your contract to a coach and the benchmark is 7 wins, that's pathetic.
But that's... Iowa's one of those teams, though, when, hey, we got to win this to go to a bowl game. I think half that damn team, half that state is sitting there going, okay, whatever.
Well,
I think they were pleasantly surprised at winning 12-0 to start last season.
Yes. You know what's amazing?
And then they didn't get smoked. When they got beat in the Big Ten title game.
Yeah, that was
game,
a good game. That was a good game.
I had so many Iowa fans that I'm friends with who were like, well, this is probably for the best that we now get to go to the Rose Bowl. And I was sitting there going, no, this totally sucks ass. You could have been 13-0 right
and
there.
Playing in the college football playoff. Since I host the Iowa postgame show, you know how many people said, I'd rather go to the Rose Bowl than the playoff?
I bet 9 out of 10.
It was just amazing to me. I'm like, you guys don't get it. The interesting part is, you know, you go back to last year. Iowa goes to the Big Ten championship game, goes in the tank, gets drilled in the bowl game. Michigan State goes to the college football playoff, gets drilled. Nebraska plays UCLA. UCLA hasn't been the same. I mean, it's been a weird year in college football. We went through the top 25 the other day on my radio show, and we went the preseason top 25. Of the 25, there were 12 busts, absolute busts, that just they're not there anymore. Gone. Nowhere to be found.
Like you're talking about the preseason.
Yeah, preseason poll to where, and it's just, and I mean, we're talking Michigan State was a huge bust. Oregon was a huge bust.
And those
Iowa
were,
was
those
a huge
were,
bust.
Those were top 10, top 12 teams.
Yeah, we're not talking teams. Yeah. I mean, we also counted teams that started 17th that aren't there, but we're talking teams that were in the top 10 that were just an absolute bust.
Some of those teams, though, I think you can look at. Oregon's still...
Oregon's no good.
No, but that was the one that surprised me a little bit just because I think they still have some very good athletes.
They have athletes, but here's where they screwed up. And if you don't believe in the ability to develop a quarterback for a 3 to 4 to 3 or even a 2 year period and bringing them up through your system, you can't bring in guys that were
do the grad transfer
and expect to win. You just can't do it. It's a bad formula to have.
No, every so often you can catch Russell Wilson in a bottle and it works.
Yes. But he's a one in a million guy.
Yeah. Iowa last year to this year though, I don't know if that surprises me that much.
It does me.
See, I thought last year there was a little smoke and mirrors.
No, I wouldn't call it smoke and mirrors. They just it's momentum. We just talked like momentum in Nebraska.
Yeah, they had good momentum.
Yes.
They found ways to win games, but it was kind of like Nebraska last year losing by that. There's
when you have confidence,
one, two, maybe three plays a game that killed you. Iowa was the opposite. They were finding one, two plays a game to pull it out.
Yeah,
I guess that's what I mean by smoke and mirrors. Normally, you'd look at a team and go, "Oh my God, they went 12-2. These guys are
okay.
These guys are awesome, and they got everybody back." And I'm sitting there going, "God, these guys were one or two plays a game from being a 7-win team last year."
Okay, so Nebraska loses the look closely, but this year they pull away in the fourth quarter. Is Nebraska a little smoke and mirrors this year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they were last year too. Their record last year as a bad team, they weren't as bad as their record. This year, when they were 7-1 after that Wisconsin game, I'm sitting here going, "Yeah, you know what? They're pretty good. I don't know if I'd have these guys as the 6th-ranked team in the country.
Yeah,
9th-ranked, whatever it was, 15th. Yeah, I'd buy that.
I'm not buying Penn State right now at number 10. That no way am I buying that. I know they beat Ohio State, but I'm just not buying Penn State.
No, although some of that's James Franklin.
But
I'm not sure.
Here's the deal. You go, basically, if Wisconsin's 7, and Wisconsin's good, I don't think Wisconsin's great, it shows you that there's a huge difference between the haves and the have-nots in college football right now. Huge difference.
Yeah, there is, but I think the haves, that's a small group this year.
It is. It's Alabama.
Well, yeah, that's true. Well, I think you've got Alabama, but then you've got kind of this 3 to 5 team cluster right after Alabama.
Yeah.
And then after you get outside of that 3 to 5 teams, I mean, you've got, well, you used to have A&M in there, maybe not so much anymore.
No.
But you got
Trevor Knight's done.
But you got Michigan and Ohio State, and you got Clemson, and you got Washington in there. I mean, there's some very good teams in there. I don't know if they're as good as Alabama, but you got some good teams in there. And then once you get past that little top 6-7 teams in the country, and I said this before, from about number 7 or number 8 through number 25, it's a freaking toss-up.
Very, very much so.
I mean, it's
so.
An absolute toss-up. You know, you want to talk about smoke and mirrors, anybody can kind of throw a little illusion at you, and all of a sudden they're sitting at number 13th in the country.
Hey, if you like what Dr. Rob is saying, make sure to follow Dr. Rob on Twitter at DocTalkSports. He wasn't very active in the Ohio State game last week, and I don't know if you were responding, because I get your Twitter feed too, so I know people were asking you questions. I don't know if you were responding
to them
or not.
I had a handful of them during the Ohio State game and right after. Not much, because I think most Nebraska fans were sitting there like I was. I think we were feeling like the Nebraska players, just shell-shocked. Like, what the hell just happened?
at Doc Talk Sports. Again, at Doc Talk Sports is where you follow Dr. Rob on Twitter. Want to thank the Remington Trophy. Coming up January 14th, 2017, Rococo Theater for tickets. Dr. Rob's going to be down there. I believe I'm going to be down there. Get them right now at RemingtonTrophy.com. I guess we haven't asked Dave if he's going to give us tickets this year. I just assume that he's going to.
No, I'll buy tickets. That's a great event.
See, I'm cheap. You have more money than I do.
It is an absolute who's who of college and NFL guys.
Want to thank Husker Hounds and HuskerMax.com. Huskers, Minnesota this weekend. Rob and I will be back next week to talk about that game and talk about the Huskers getting ready for Maryland. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy your football Saturday. And thanks for listening to the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.